I don't know if that jumped out at you at all this week as you were reading. But on page 74, if you have your books, this comes out of Numbers chapter 12. But God makes a point to set Moses apart from everybody else. I mean, he does that. We looked last week on how he says, look, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to come down on this mountaintop, and I'm going to come with a full sense, and I'm sure it wasn't a full sense, but for the people that were there, with a great sense of my power and my presence. And once they get a feel for who I am and what it's like to be around me, then I'm going to speak to you personally, Moses, and I'm going to do that so that the people will know you're the guy I talk to and you're the guy who's representing me to them. And that's exactly what he does. He also chooses Aaron and Miriam. And at this particular juncture, you know, they're kind of thinking, hey, we're doing some stuff here too. And they start getting a little bit, I don't know, full of themselves, or I don't know exactly what's going on in their minds. I mean, there's some details here, but at some point, the bottom of page 73, that's also out of Numbers, you know, God has to say or says to them, to Aaron and Miriam, look, Moses is a very humble man, and he's more humble than anyone else on the face of the earth. You know, that's how he's being described in this. And he says, look, when there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, reveal myself to them in visions, and I speak to them in dreams. But this is not true with my servant Moses. He's faithful in all of my house. With him, I speak face to face, clearly, and not in riddles. He sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? Moses speaks to God face to face. Now, that expression face to face, it must not be literally face to face, because we know from the week before that God says, no one can look on my face and live. And so Moses says, but I want to see your glory. And so he hides him in the cleft of a rock. And as he goes by, he covers Moses so that he can't see his face, but he gets to see the back of him and sees his glory. And he hears God pronounce his name and who he is and all the things about him. In fact, Moses brings that back to God's mind in the reading for this week, and reminds God who he has declared himself to be, one who is slow to anger and quick to be merciful, and but is also a just God. And he reminds God of all the things that he had declared in his presence. My point being, though, that Moses didn't actually get to see God's face, as we would say, and yet there's a degree of this relationship that God says, this is, I speak to him face to face. Last week in our reading, we remember that Moses would go into this tent of meeting and God was there. And whatever, however that worked, after Moses would spend time with God in this relating back and forth, Moses would come out and his face would just be radiating with glory. I mean, it would just be shining. And the people at first, they're afraid. And so Moses puts this veil over. And whenever he goes in and talks to God, he lifts the veil and he speaks to God. And whenever he comes back out, he puts this veil back over his face so that the people wouldn't see, literally see the glory fading, is the way it's described. So I'm thinking about Moses. Here is a guy that is face to face with God. I want to know what that guy has to say. I mean, if he's going to say something to speak into my life, what is he going to say? We have that here. This was a really neat synopsis of the things that Moses has to say towards the end of his life. Now, just as a quick rundown, and I will say that, okay, I got up here about 7 minutes ago, okay, just for the record. So we will go quickly in the interest of brevity, if you're interested in that. The things that happened, I just kind of outlined some of these things. If I were to kind of title this section of the story, it would be Problems and Punishments. I mean, doesn't it get a bit ridiculous? I mean, here is Israel, and first they're saying, oh, you know, you brought us out here. We would have been better off in Egypt. We're so hungry. And God says, okay, I'll give you manna. And it's not very long after that, oh, we're so tired of manna. It's such a burden. I mean, all they're doing, this is the closest to the garden life that man has come since the garden. You know, in the garden it was, oh, I'm hungry. Here's fruit. And then they're cursed, and from now on you're going to have to labor at this. Well, this is the closest they've been to getting food without labor. I mean, this is like the original drive-through. They're driving through the desert, and all they have to do is pick up the manna. I mean, it's there for them. They're not having to harvest. They're not having to plow. God's delivering it to their door, and they're complaining. God gets upset about it. We want meat. We want meat. And did you do some of the numbers this week about the quail? I mean, you realize how much quail God sent. He blows in this wind. He said, we want meat. He said, okay, you want meat? I'm going to give you so much meat. You're going to eat it till it's coming out your nose. Do you remember, we kind of calculated some of this. It was like 2 foot deep over the size of Broken Arrow. I mean, just this, as far as the eye could see, it says. The population we thought would be about the size of Tulsa. Okay, I said Broken Arrow. I mean Tulsa. And imagine that the quail is 2 foot deep as far as you can see. That's the amount of quail we're talking about. And it's not surprising then that a plague would come after that. I mean, there's so much dead bird lying all over the place. They can't even eat. It's just piled up and it's just putrefying. And a plague comes. And God says, okay, you want meat? There's meat. It's interesting that Moses had said, can you really do that? I mean, you'd have to empty the seas in order to feed these people. The magnitude of this sometimes, I think, gets lost on us. The millions of people. Some scholars say it could be as much as 3 million people. I mean, that's just huge. And all of this quail to feed them. Miriam and Aaron, they get upset. Miriam has leprosy. The people, they come up to the land. God leads them through all this. They come up to the land and he sends out the spies. And the spies are like, oh no, we're too small. We're like grasshoppers in our own eyes. The people are way too big for us. And so God says, all right, until you all die out, you're just going to wander around. I mean, you would think they just came. They've only been out of town, meaning away from Egypt for a year. God has brought them out. He's done all these miracles for them. He's let them settle. He's let them gain their strength. He's given them a tabernacle. You know, surely I'm with you. Surely I am. And then their first real big challenge, and they won't do it. They're too afraid. They get to Meribah, and Meribah is the place of quarreling. And it's interesting that this is their... in this telling, this is their second time around. The first time around, they get there and we're so thirsty. And God says, all right, just strike the rock. And he strikes the rock and the water comes. Well, this is a whole generation later. And they come back to the same spot. And they're crying about being thirsty again. So, I don't know, getting there must have been pretty strenuous. And it's the same place. They're crying about being thirsty again. And it's interesting that this time God says, okay, Moses, I want you to just speak to the rock. And there's a whole nother sermon there that I won't go into. But Moses takes his staff and he says, you rebellious people, do we have to give you water? And he hits the rock 2 times. The words there are pretty clear why maybe Moses got punished. But unfortunately, we don't have time to talk about that. And then they go on from there after Moses strikes the rock. And of course, he's cursed. And God says to him, look, you're not going to be able to enter into the promised land. So we see at the end of his days, he's up on this new mountain that Israel now owns because they sacked the Moabites. And he gets to see all the land of Canaan, but he doesn't get to enter in because of this one act. Along the way, they do have some victories. And I think this is kind of God teaching them, you know, kind of getting them in shape for the things that are about to come when they're going to actually seize the land. They have a couple of victories. They keep asking for a pike pass. You know, hey, can we come through? And nobody's very hospitable. And you can imagine why. I mean, here's as many as, you know, 1 million or 3 million people to come through the land. I mean, imagine Oklahoma City asking if they could just walk through Tulsa. I mean, that's kind of the magnitude of what we're talking about. Sure, they're going to be afraid. Oh, yeah, you just want to walk through. Sure you do. You're not going to sack our home. You're not going to take our stuff. You're not going to eat our food. He says, no, we promise we won't. We've got our own sack lunch. God provides it for us. But they couldn't believe that. So, you know, they win some of these battles along the way, which is a good thing. But the battle that they can't win, or they could, but they choose not to, is the battle of their own sexuality. And they're enticed by the women, the Moabite women. And through that, they end up having these improper relationships, not only with the women, but they entice them into worshiping their own gods. And you just think, how would they do that? How could they do that? There's more details there, and I'm only sharing these with you to bring you to the point of where Moses is at the end of all of this. I skimmed by the fact that Moses strikes the rock, but I think it's a significant detail because it tells us a little bit about the state of his mind. He's probably pretty frustrated. I mean, how many times around are we going to have to do this? How long is it going to take you stiff-necked people to actually believe in the God that I'm talking to every single day? Can't you understand who he is and what he's trying to do and who he wants to be for you and how he is with us? He had to be so frustrated. So, you know, this is the Moses that is at the end of his life and at the end of this journey. And before he dies, he has some things to say. If you have your story, your version of the story, it's around page 85. If you're looking at a digital version, it's Moses did as the Lord commanded him, and he took Joshua and had him stand before Eleazar, and he, you know, Joshua becomes the next guy, and Eleazar is now the new high priest, and all of that's taking place. And then Moses, it says on page 84, these are the words that Moses spoke to all Israel in the wilderness east of the Jordan. So this is the man who has spent all this time face to face with God. These are his conclusions. Before I leave, this is what I want you to understand in light of everything that I've seen. Some highlights, two paragraphs down. He says, the Lord your God has blessed you in all the work of your hands. He's watched over your journey through this vast wilderness these 40 years. The Lord your God has been with you, and you have not lacked anything. Ask now about the former days. If you want to know, ask where we came from. Ask about creation. Ask about all of this. Here's what you need to understand. You were shown these things so that you might know that the Lord is God, and beside him there is no other. If I, the one who has been spent time with God face to face, if there's one thing I would have you know above all the other things, it's this right here. The Lord is God in heaven above and on the earth below. There is no other. If you want this one fact to govern your whole life, there's only one God. He's the God who created everything, and he created you. And that should make all the difference in the world. I've been sitting with him all this time. Look at my face. I mean, can you imagine the sense of urgency he would have? He says, hear, Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Know that there's one God, and love that God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all of your strength. Every emotion that you can have, every desire that you have in your life, everything that you would work for in your life, just make it about him. If there's one thing I would tell you is that there's only one God who created everything, and he wants you to love him. This is the guy who spent 40 years talking with God face to face. He says, look, you need to be careful to follow every command that I give you. God, I've been spending this time with God, and he's been telling me this is how you ought to live your life. Know that there's one God and that he wants you to love him. And the way you're going to show that love is to obey him. I mean, if I could tell you anything before I die, this is what I would tell you. He says this, "These commands that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children." So not only would I tell you that there's only one God, He's the creator of everything, and that He absolutely loves you and wants you to love Him, and that He's given you the way to live this amazing life. Tell your kids. Tell your kids about God. I mean, don't just tell them. I mean, tell them all the time. Like when you're walking down the street, and write it on your doorpost. Put it everywhere. Don't let your kids live a day without knowing about this God that I've been spending every day with. Impress this upon them. Not just like, hey, well, we do go to church. No. Impress upon them the God who made you and made everything loves you and wants you to love Him with every part of your being. Impress that upon your kids. And He's made the way for us to live, not by accident. He says, this is what's right and this is what's wrong. And He's done that we would have full days, full life, long lifespan. Jesus comes around and says later that you would have fullness of life, life abundant and more abundantly. Here's Moses in the last days of his life. The guy who spent face-to-face time with God. And this is what he said. He says, remember how the Lord your God led you all the way in the wilderness these 40 years. To humble and test you in order to know what is in your heart. Whether or not you would keep His commands. He humbled you, causing you to hunger and then feeding you with manna, which neither you nor your ancestors had known, to teach you that man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. Interesting that we hear that later. Your clothes did not wear out. Your feet did not swell during those 40 years. Know then in your heart that as a man disciplines his son, so the Lord your God disciplines you. So he would say to them, you got to understand there's one God who's desperately in love with you and wants you to love Him. And He's given you this way of life. No, buy into that with everything you've got and impress it upon your kids. And don't forget your history. Are you consciously building your history, like intentionally with your family? Like going back periodically and saying, let's just review for a minute how much God has done for us. Just in our lifetime. Just in our family. Just since mommy and daddy have come together. Just since you guys are our grandkids, some of you grandkids being born. Just since Jordan and Vivian got married. It is so important that we remember. And Moses would say in some of his last words, the guy who spent face time with God, there's so much value in remembering how far you've come with God. How far God has brought you. You should be intentional about that. They're about to embark in the next new thing. In fact, it's the part that Moses isn't going to get to participate in. He's been able to participate up until now, but he knows because God's told him. And apparently he's good with that. He understands. But he tells them this, be assured today that as you go into this next part, as you go into this land that's been promised you, as you remember all that God has done and how far He's brought you, here's what I would say to you. Be assured that the Lord your God is the one who goes ahead of you. I mean, here's Moses who has face time with God. His last words, he would say, look, as you live your life, you can take this to the bank. God is always a step ahead of you. God is the one who's plowing the way. He knows the way. He has planned for you. Paul picks up on this and he says, you know, the works that God has planned in advance for us to do. I mean, it's the same idea that God is the one who's going ahead. He's preparing the way. You don't have to fear. This God who made everything, who's absolutely in love with you and wants you to be in love with Him, who has given a way for you to live your life and for the generations after you to live your life, the God who's brought you this far up to this point is already out in front. You don't have to be afraid. He really is in control. This is the kind of stuff that Moses is radiating just from his presence, and he can't help but say it. The dying words of a man who's spent face-to-face time with God. This last bit, I think, is huge. He says, after the Lord your God has driven them out, all these people, you know, He's made the way, and you're going to come into this land. And after He's done all that, do not say to yourself, I'm on page 86 if you're following along. Do not say to yourself, the Lord has brought me here to take possession of this land because of my righteousness. No, it is on account of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is going to drive them out before you. It is not because your righteousness or your integrity that you're going to take possession of their land. But on account of the wickedness of these nations, the Lord your God will drive them out before you. And it's not simply even because they're bad solely. It's because God is the God who is right and He's just. And He is proclaiming His name in every aspect of this. He says, for you, you're a stiff-necked people. So here's the guy who would spend face-to-face time with God for 40 years. And he would say, don't ever think this was because of you. I think that's the mistake Moses made when he struck the rock. Even after all those years, in his frustration, he said, do we have to give you water? And for that moment, he lost the plot. He thought it was because of something he had done. Just for that moment. And afterwards, he's like, oh, God. I'm so stupid. Moses, you can't go into the land. Because you didn't trust me enough to honor me in that moment. And Moses, being the humble guy that he was, says, you're right. And I'll never forget that. And I sure don't want Israel to forget that. This is not about you. Because if it were, you're a stiff-necked people. What's amazing is when we get to the New Testament, in Acts chapter 3, Peter's trying to encourage the Israelites. I don't know if we're going to pull this up or not. Really, just go jump down to verse 22. For time's sake, we'll just skip ahead. But this is right after, you know, this is the day of Pentecost, and Peter's calling them to repent and all these things, and they've done that, and they continue to preach, and this is the second sermon that they're giving that we have in the books here. And he says, you know, Israelites, I know you acted in ignorance as your leaders did. That's verse 17. You know, but this is how God foretold what was going to happen. He said this would be. But in verse 22 it says this. Moses said, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among your own people, and you must listen to everything he tells you. He's saying, look, the one who was to come, you almost are about to miss him because you just hung him on a tree. You almost missed him. If we go to the next verse, is it Hebrews? The Hebrew writer describes God like this, describes Jesus like this. He says, you know, in the past, God spoke through the ancestors. He spoke through the prophets at the times and in various ways. But in these last days, he spoke to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things and through whom he also made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory. So here's Moses. Moses would have this face-to-face time with God. And once he left God's presence, his face was just radiating with the glory of God. And so they had to put this veil over him, like I described before. Well, now here's the one that came who's like Moses, but he doesn't just reflect God's glory. He radiates God's glory. He is the exact representation of the being of God who is sustaining all things by his powerful word. And not only that, but he has provided purification for the sins of the people, and he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven. Jesus is the one who came like Moses, but in such a greater way. In 2 Corinthians chapter 3, it says this in verse 16. Whenever anyone turns to the Lord, and it's interesting what Paul does with the words here. He kind of plays on this idea of what happened with Moses, this face-to-face relationship. He says, now we have an opportunity. Whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. Now, up until this time, Israel was not seeing Jesus like this. They still had this veil over their faces. They couldn't see Jesus for who he was. But when we in faith, when we would turn to the Lord, the veil is lifted up. Now the Lord is the Spirit. And where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's freedom. Listen to this. And we all who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory are being transformed into his image with ever increasing glory, which comes from the Lord in who is the Spirit. This relationship that Moses had, I mean, he would go into the tent of meeting and he would meet face to face with God, and he would come out and having grown through that experience and having been given wisdom, he would physically radiate or reflect the glory of God. Do you understand that we have that opportunity? I mean, that's the amazing message of the Scriptures. And not that we would simply just, you know, God's glory would bounce off of us. But look at the words. We are being transformed into his image with ever increasing glory. That takes us all the way back to the beginning of the story where God created us in his image. Well, what if we could actually become his image? What if we actually could participate in that glory? Not just have it bounce off, but we actually, like the Son who is the firstborn from among many, radiate the glory of God. That's the message. That's what we're invited into. John says this in 1 John chapter 1. He says, look, that which was from the beginning, which we've heard, which we've seen with our eyes, which we have looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. The life appeared. We've seen it. We testify to it. Now, this is what you have to understand, that there was Moses in the tent of meeting with God. There was Israel with God at the mountain. In fact, there's one of the Old Testament passages that says that God appeared to them face to face in the mountain. The next people who get that privilege are these guys right here. When they awaken to the idea that I am walking in the presence of God, that which was from the beginning, the one who made all things, in him was the Word, and that Word was life. And that life was the light of men. We've seen him. Our hands have touched him. This is the guy that leaned up against the breast of Jesus and ate with him. We proclaim to you the eternal life. that was with him. We proclaim to you, which was with the Father and has appeared to us. We proclaim to you, the next passage, Evan, keep going. We proclaim to you what we've seen and what we've heard so that you also may have fellowship with us. And our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. And look at what he says. We write this to make our joy complete. Did I stop there or did I go two more verses? Two more verses says this. Listen to this. This is the message that we've heard from him and declared to you. God is light. In him, there's no darkness at all. And if we have claimed a fellowship with him, and yet we walk in the darkness, we lie and we do not tell the truth. But if we walk in the light, as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another. And the blood of Jesus, his Son, purifies us from all sins. Do you get the imagery of radiating the glory of God? Now with Jesus, we get to bask in his glory, in the light of his goodness. And if we walk in his light, and if we stay in his light, then we have fellowship with him. And in another place, Paul says, and when Christ, who is your life, appears, you also appear with him in glory. I don't know how many times I'm going to say that to you. I say it like every week. You see, because we're invited into this face-to-face relationship. This is how Paul describes it to the Corinthians. He says, you know, where there were prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they'll be stilled. Where there's knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, because those things are meant to be leading us into something. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, and a child is ignorant, a child doesn't have understanding, a child doesn't have wisdom, a child doesn't understand the depth of relationship. And when I was like that, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror, and then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I'm fully known. There is meant to be this growing relationship with God where the childishness of the Israelites and that kind of stiff-necked people, the stuff that they do, that's supposed to be dropping off of us. As we walk more and more in nearness and in closeness with God, as we turn to him with unveiled faces and we look at the Christ and we see his radiance and we bask in that radiance with him, and his spirit starts to fill and overtake our spirit. And things become more complete in us. And I find that, you know, I'm not feeling as selfish as I used to feel, or I don't get as frustrated as quickly as I used to get. Or, you know, I find myself being more encouraging instead of discouraging, and I don't need to put other people down in order to make myself feel better. And God starts shaping this heart and this life, and there's this transformation that's taking place. And suddenly, if we were to continue reading in the Corinthian letter, we become like this sweet aroma. Because we look like Christ and we speak like Christ. And the glory of God comes from inside of us. And it's called love. So the how, we go back to Moses on page 87. You know, all this sounds real grand and real nice, you know, and is that really happening? And how does that even take place? Well, Moses, the guy who spent all this time face-to-face with God, he tells us how to have that kind of face-to-face relationship where we are fully known and we know even as we're fully known. This is what he says, and we'll close with this. This day I call the heavens and the earth as a witness against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. It's the message that Moses gave. It's the message that Christ gave. It's the message of the day. You can have life if you want it. And so can I. Here's how. He says, choose. choose. It's amazing that every moment of every day, it really does come down to that. Choose life. That's what he says. Now, choose life. Like right now. And then 5 minutes from now, when it's now again, choose life again. Choose. It's not that hard, Israel. We all along, you could be experiencing what I've been experiencing inside the tent. I mean, look, God is with us. You just have had to choose. You could have avoided 40 years of wandering if you just chose life the first time. But it takes faith to do that. He tags on there, now choose life so that you and your children may live and that you may love the Lord your God. Then he says this, listen to his voice. I mean, are these not the same things we're called to right now? Doesn't Jesus say, oh, if you would have eyes to see and ears to hear? Moses says, choose. Choose God and then listen for his voice. And then the last thing is this, and hold fast to him, for the Lord is your life. The dying words of a man who spent face-to-face time with God would bring all of that down to these three things. It's just a daily choice to live for God. So listen for his voice, because he'll show you how to do that. Hold on for a while.
Life gets complicated and it gets, Tamar is right. We need the kind of prayer that kind of center because life rushes by. Moses would have us just because you make it so simple. God, I want to choose you today. Help me to hear your voice, and I'm going to cling to that.
Whatever happens won't be because you got that right. Because it's never been about you.